if you spend the time to give it a little bit of a pre-polish in zirconia, that will save you thousands of dollars on polishing burrs and polishing wheels, because in sintered zirconia, when it's rock hard, you're going to make it shine, but it's really hard to change the contour.
Welcome to the Digital Smile Hub, the podcast that is dedicated to making clinical dentistry simple. Join us as we decode the complexities of dental care by providing actionable insights into the diverse aspects of clinical practice, the latest trends, and the newest technologies. Whether you're a seasoned clinician or just starting out of dental school, listen in on engaging discussions, expert interviews, and a wealth of tips and tricks to enhance your clinical workflows. So turn up that volume and get ready to transform your clinical practice with the Digital Smile Hub. And now, here's your host, Dr. Tim Anderson.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back. It's another week, and I don't know about you guys, but I am ready for spring. In North Dakota, our winters are weird. This year's been really weird. It hasn't really snowed very much. We've got a lot of cold, but it's been like this hot, cold. Like literally yesterday was 62 degrees. And then later this week, they're like, we're going to get some weird Colorado low and we're expected like anywhere from a foot to 2 feet of snow. So I am over it. I'm ready for spring, ready for summer, as I'm guessing many of you as well. And I think the reason I'm actually most excited for spring and summer is that finally all my kids' sporting events from the winter, aka hockey, are now done. And I get to take a week-long break from no sports and then jump into the next sport. So looking forward to that. But as spring arrives, it's I always look at that like spring's always a fun time for us because A, time change gives us, I feel like, a little bit more sunlight. It feels a little bit more human, especially for those that live up north. But more importantly, for me, it's like a new chapter, a new start to get things going and honestly just like a do-over. And it allows me to look in my practice, go like, hey, What do we want to do next? Like a lot of people do these like at the end of the year and what we can do at the end of the year. And I don't know about you, but come December, that's the last thing I want to think about is dentistry and work. Like I just want a break. And so for me, springtime seems to be a little bit more fun because I'm still excited about being back. I'm ready for the next thing. The weather is getting better. And I think it's an opportunity for us to start really planning out. And it's also a time for a lot of us to like start really looking at our CE calendar of like, what courses are we going to do? What are we going to have coming up? I'm super excited. I got some fun courses that A, I'm a part of, B, I get to teach, and C, I get to take that are coming up this year. So, and you guys will hear a lot about that as we kind of move forward, but there's some really cool summits coming up, both that I'm involved with and both that I'm not at all and I'm an attendee. And so I'm super excited about all of these things coming up. But as I started again thinking of it, it's like, all right, see, like what things in my practice have been like pivotal moments that have really changed my outlook of how I do dentistry. And looking back at everything, you know, everybody looks at like the big core three. And I will say that the number one piece of technology hands down is photography. Like I'll argue that to the end of the earth. However, when I look at certain technologies that really moved the needle and got me like excited about things, the big two that always come up, or the big three, I would say, are, you know, photography, cone beam, and scanning. And I personally think photography is priority number one, A, because it's the barrier entry is the smallest, but B, it helps you see things different. When we look at cone beam and scanning, I really don't know if there's like a perfect answer for everybody. It really depends on what you want to do. And for me, intraoral scanning became the catalyst that changed my career. And I've talked about this a little bit in the past, but intraoral scanning, and more importantly, CAD/CAM dentistry, so in-office manufacturing and designing, changed my outlook on dentistry because it allowed me to do more, but it allowed me to learn and see the value of CE. And I couldn't unsee that. And what that really did is, like I said, became the catalyst that forever changed my trajectory. It changed my career. It changed what I wanted to do in dentistry. But it all started with a leap of faith of jumping into a manufacturing process. And that's really what I wanted to talk about tonight was, or today, or whatever it is for you, is CAD/CAM dentistry and what that means to different people. Because I think it really does mean different things to different individuals based on where you are in your career and what type of dentistry you want to do. But I do truly believe it is at the core of every modern digital practice. and something that we all should be implementing either now and elevating our success or potentially implementing and doing more of. So I'm really excited tonight because I get to have one of my besties on tonight who has been a source of inspiration for me for many years. I actually met her before she knew who I was. I actually took CE courses from her. So I was in the audience. I saw her at Chicago Midwinter and Star of the North and it actually, and Dance by Serona World. And so it became one of these people that like you meet certain people along your path that you're like, oh, you kind of like fan crush over. You're like, I want to be like them. I want to do what they're doing. And this individual not only was doing dentistry at an unbelievably high level with regards to CAD/CAM and in-office manufacturing, but she was doing it in a way that seemed so fun. And we live in this world that we can just live in the suck of everything. And she made it look fun. And she seemed to have fun. She seemed to be really passionate. And so it just kind of like ignited my passion for it. And then our paths crossed here and there. And eventually, you know, sometimes you just get to meet these mentors of yours and then they become really close friends. And now I consider her a very, very close friend. So I'm super excited to have on tonight the one, the only Christine Odlin coming to us from Washington. How are you doing, Christine?
I am doing so wonderful. What an incredible introduction. Thank you.
Well, it's like I said, I was trying to remember actually before tonight, like when was the first time I heard of you or saw you? And I think it was Star of the North. Like I don't even know when that was. I mean, this was like you gave some, it was all about like aesthetics and anterior single central CEREC crowns, which at that point in my life, I'm like, I'm never doing CEREC. That's like, I can't do good dentistry with CEREC. I got to send it to a lab. And then I went to a course at DS World where you were doing it again. And then you went over, it was like over the financial side of like the business side of you doing your startup. And I think that's what resonated with me because I was just thinking about doing a startup. And so I have like, I still on my phone, I think I have screenshots of like your production and how much revenue. You're like, you got to do this. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm taking all this in. Like I can do this. So it's funny how things come full circle, but that's enough about me getting to know you. Tell the listeners here who don't know who you are a little bit about you and how you got into CAD/CAM dentistry.
Oh, wow. So I graduated dental school in 2006. In 2006, I was at OHSU, so Oregon Health Science University. And the most digital thing we had is we had digital x-rays. And that was a really big thing when I went to dental school. And I'd heard about CAD/CAM.
Hold on, when did you were 2006?
Yeah, 2006.
I graduated in 2010, and we did not have digital x-rays, if that gives you any reference to the University of Minnesota.
Isn't that funny? They're just all schools still today are all over the board. I had heard about CEREC, heard about CAD/CAM a little bit. I was engineering background, so very intrigued by it. But if you said the word CEREC at OHSU, you were pretty much a fail. And so when I graduated, I knew I wanted to do my own practice, but I had an opportunity to be an associate first. And he had this magical machine called a CEREC machine. And he had two offices and I was going to do one of his smaller kind of startup offices, which was great for me because that's what I wanted to do in my own practice eventually. But I was super intimidated by this machine that I knew nothing about. And I was intimidated because also everyone had told me how awful it was. Like, obviously, if you were a CEREC doctor, you were a bad clinician. And I grew up in this town, so I didn't want that reputation. And I love taking care of people. And what I learned was that there was so much magic by doing same day dentistry. And at that time we were using the red cam, which is like you had Oof. To, I know.
That's tough.
And this is before smartphones and touch screens and all these things, which like going way back, you forget that we lived in this time. And so I had this magical machine computer sitting next to me. And if I could run it, then my patients automatically thought, oh, she must be so good. Even though I was just out of school. Now, I thought I was a really good dentist right out of school, but as we all know, when you're first out of school, you don't have all those reps in place. So I dove straight into CAD/CAM, learned to love it mostly because of the patient response to it. One of my best friends, her mom was a dentist down in Eugene area, and she would just laugh at me and be like, someday you're going to just regret making ugly crowns. Like you have to actually prep. And that didn't even matter if it was CAD/CAM versus if I sent it to a lab, but you're just so afraid if to pulp a tooth and heaven forbid you take more than 0.2 millimeters off. Like we just have all these hangups. And what I loved about CADCAM too is it was instant feedback to us. And so if you're humble enough to like really look at something, or if something breaks, to be like, oh, I really messed that up. It turns out that material class that I took or that prep class that I took in school really mattered. You can learn so much so quickly. And so it was kind of this crash course of, and falling in love with it truly because of the patient response, but then wanting to really improve my dentistry. So dove headfirst into it and have learned so many things along the way. It's been incredible.
Well, and what I love about your journey is that it wasn't like you just like walked into it, you were perfect with it and ran with it. And I think that's something that anybody, like what, any aspect of dentistry, like there's so many times we run into barriers or we struggle or we have a failure or something like that. And immediately we're like, I don't want to do that again. And so we like push it aside. And for some people, the extreme is like, oh, I perfed a root canal, or I broke a file. I'm not doing endo anymore. Or I exposed the sinus. I'm not doing any surgeries anymore. Or Christine doesn't like blood. So it could be like, I saw blood. I don't want to do surgery anymore. There's all these things that like get in the way of progress. And one of the things that I've always struggled with, honestly, in dentistry is that, and I think it's part of the way we're educated and brought up, like we're critiqued along the way constantly. And so there's like this, always this strive for perfection. It needs to be a certain way and all this. And what I do think our education programs sometimes struggle connecting the dots with is the fact that dentistry is a continuing evolution of a skill set, meaning you need to learn to walk before you can run, and you need to learn to crawl before you can walk. And as you're learning that process, you fall down, you get bumps, and you cry and all these things. And we've all been there where we just want to cry, like things don't work. And we just, sometimes it's good to have a little cry, but there's so many times that it just drives me nuts that if it's not perfect, we don't want to do it. And what I love talking, why I love talking to people like yourself is that there's this, we see the joy and the excitement, not only that it brings us and our team, but we see with the patients that experience. And I think that's so important that we need to remember that there's a person attached to the other end of this tooth that we're fabricating or restoring or whatever we're doing that honestly matters more than the tooth. And their experience matters more to me than sometimes the dentistry. And that when you have that focus on the person, I think that's what really changes your perspective of how you integrate technology. And then you start, like you say, you get to see all these amazing changes within your practice and all that. Now, you walked into a CEREC, which is amazing. And what's crazy to me is how many times I hear that. Like, I bought an office, it came with this equipment, and you kind of are like, am I going to use it or not? And some of you use it, others sell it, that kind of thing. And then there's a different group of people that are looking to purchase. And, you know, you've educated more CADCAM doctors than most people. What do you see as some of the driving factors of why people want to get into CADCAM? And then the flip side of that is, what do you see as some of the barriers of why people don't get into CADCAM?
I think the biggest barrier of why people don't get in is just truly the expense. And that luckily today is coming down. I mean, you look at the price of scanners and then the different technologies that are encompassing CADCAM technology, and we are lowering that, which is awesome. Whether it's, I mean, we're milling with CADCAM, obviously, but there's printing, and now there's a lot of other systems. When I graduated, there were two systems on the market and two set prices. So, and then trying to figure out what that ROI is. Again, like when I graduated, crowns were like $500 per crown for lab fee. And so, and then it was $30 a block. So you could do that math. If I do X amount of crowns per month, and then that changed when we could do bridges or we could do implant crowns. Now it's just so different because we do have those other capabilities. Then it comes to what is that patient experience and how are you going to set yourself apart from others? So with that patient experience today, we live in an immediate gratification world. Like, people want things now. They are used to getting on their phone, looking at Amazon, ordering it, and having it delivered sometimes within hours. Might not happen in North Dakota.
No, we don't get it in hours. Like, I was amazed when I went where I was in Raleigh, and I was able to order Target same day delivery to a house. That blew my mind. I think Target pickup's cool, but I have to go to get that. We don't get delivery yet. Struggle's real.
Struggle's real. Well, and that's, you know, as things are evolving in every aspect of our world, like, why wouldn't we want that in our healthcare? And that's where we can meet those patient demands. And then the barrier is us, right? Like, and you think about when I graduated, we didn't have social media. There was one platform that we would go on and we would post our cases. I mean, I look at my work then versus my work today. Obviously, it's come very, very far. But now you post things on social media and you have the whole world critiquing you. And you have AI showing people what their teeth could look like, if it's possible or not, with any skill set, who knows. But it's just a big difference today versus, 18 years ago when I had graduated.
You brought up, I think, some really good points, because you have a mindset of a true business owner. Because your focus was on the culture within your practice. Like, the value of some of these ROIs or some of the technology is based on the experience that it provides the patient. And we want, like, this, I want it now culture, like you said, and what social media does. I was always amazed, like, when I got my first CAD CAM system, it was like, patients thought I was the most high-end dentist in our community. And like, this technology has been around for 30 years, you guys. Like, sure, I'm the first. But we always have this mentality of like drill and fill and bill, like the old school brick and mortar dental office. But I think what, you know, like Chris mentioned, she did a startup. And I think sometimes those that do a startup have just a little bit different mentality with regards to ROI and it being a bigger picture, because you kind of touched on one of the most common misconceptions, I think, that we see in CAD/CAM dentistry is that the ROI is based on replacing the lab. And replacing the cost of a crown. And I think what's interesting is, you know, back when you got into it, the lab view was crazy high. Well, now you can get a AI designed crown that is alien labs or whatever labs that are out there in these really economy based or cheap labs cost wise. And you can get a zirconia crown for under $100. So all of a sudden, like, the lab savings doesn't necessarily make sense. And I'm still amazed at people that think that the CAD/CAM milling and bringing it in office, the true value of that is replacing the lab cost. And I think we're missing the point. It's kind of like looking at a 3D printer and saying it replaces, you know, plaster and stone. And I think we're missing the point of like the true value of what it does to the culture of your practice. So, you know, with that mindset of like, you know, it's not about the lab fee. What do you see, like, in your own practice? Like, what do you see as the true value of what digital scanning and in-office manufacturing and what that brings to your practice?
I will tell you, I have, 20 something women on my team now, and like, they all love to take care of people. And we really focus, we do a lot of same day dentistry. And a lot of that is truly getting patients out of pain. So whether that's surgery, whether that's milling, doing a crown, it's really just focusing on taking care of those people, not sending them out the door, having them come back and reschedule. Like, let's take care of that now. And then the team, they all have their favorite things to do of how they're going to take care of people. I have one team member that is terrified of staining and glazing, and she just doesn't want to do it, but she's incredible at endo and surgery. And then I have other team members who love to stain and glaze. And like, we're fighting when that crown comes out of who's going to put things together and, you know, get that crown ready. And then to see that reward of when one of my team members, one of my assistants will stain and glaze, and then she tries it in and she is just giddy because it matches and the patient's excited. Like, there's so much reward to that of, I created something with my own hands. Look how happy it's making this patient. Versus if you open a lab box and put it in, it's like, oh yeah, I picked a great shape. Maybe you did, maybe you didn't. There is something really fun about creating it with your own hands, delivering it to that patient and taking ownership for it.
Well, what I think that always did is that process of like, there's some, like you said, we live in this world of like instant gratification that I think sometimes we miss the process. Like, I love photography, and don't get me wrong, I love digital cameras these days and they're amazing with AI and eye tracking and all this crap. But what I miss is the process of developing film, because you connect differently. And when you connect like that, you do things with more intent. Like for me with photography, if I'm developing film, I'm going to really focus in on the details before I snap that picture. And one of the things that I found when I was doing digital dentistry, or when I was doing dentistry before it was digital for me, is that I didn't value the process of how things were manufactured, the process to make the crown, the material properties, how it should be bonded or cemented, how it should be prepared, how my preparation should be prepared for the ceramic thickness. And what I've seen is that process, because I didn't value the process in the beginning, I just put out something quick, just like with a camera. I'm just going to snap, snap, snap. I would pump out crowns. It was all about like, I got to have that 45-minute crown prep. And then I need a 15-minute crown seat. Like, we're going to make this so fast. And, you know, my lab script was like A1 porcelain or A1 zirconia. And you guys may laugh when I say this, but I'm telling you, all of you may laugh, but in your core, you're like, yep, I was there. And you've been there, because we all did that. Because when we don't understand things, we move through them. We just pass through them. We want to get past it. And the lack of understanding the process, what I didn't realize at the time was I wasn't focusing on the little things that mattered most to impact the success of my case. And what you will find with the highest end dentists on the planet, they have unbelievable master ceramists that truly understand the mechanical and properties of the materials, but they also work with dentists that understand that and set them up for success, which is why those cases turn out so freaking beautiful. But if we don't understand the process, we can never set them up for success. And so when I moved to CAD/CAM or CEREC at the time for me, it taught me the process and to slow down to understand the process. And like you said, I was amazed how my work got better. My team all of a sudden valued it, and my patients weren't like, wait a minute, I paid how much for this 15-minute appointment? And like, it just changed the whole culture. So I love that you bring that up, because it's something that I get really passionate about is the process of understanding why things are the way they are, why things look great, why things don't look great. And I'm continually amazed when, you know, when we do courses together where you talk to clinicians and they're like, they have no, like, you ask somebody what's the minimal thickness or minimal reduction of an Emax crown in the posterior, they might know, but the anterior, they have no idea. And then you ask them about a lithium disilicate veneer, and they look at you like a deer in headlights. Like, we just prep teeth. Like, and I hope the one thing that I can stress about the value of CAD/CAM dentistry is that it teaches you to become a better dentist. I don't care what system it is. It teaches you to slow down, understand the process and details. That was my soapbox. I got to get off that topic because I'm going to go on all night, because I love that. Chris knows I like that. I feel like you poke the bear on that, but I think you're right with that value. Okay. So one of the biggest hangups that I hear clinicians complain about with regards to, we'll just say, when I say CEREC, I mean any intraoral CAD/CAM system. It's just, they're the most popular because they have, whether you like it or not, they have the best workflow. And when you look at CEREC restorations or in-office milled restorations, the biggest kickback I have heard from clinicians and lab techs is that they look like temps. And they get very passionate about producing lab quality restorations in-office. If I can't do it as well as the lab, I shouldn't be doing it. Unless there's some huge value to doing it myself or my team doing it. Like, I would want to produce the best quality. If I wouldn't put it in my own mouth, I shouldn't be doing it. So one of the things, Chris, that I think you do, I would argue better than 98% of CEREC doctors, and I say that CAD/CAM doctors, is you pride yourself in lab quality restorations, and you do a very, very good job with that. So talk to me a little bit how you and your team make these milled restorations not look like temporaries.
Well, some of that comes from the many mistakes that I've made. And it's all the reps, and it starts from the beginning. One, like, you stress about your photography, you have to take pictures, and you want to take those pictures and you want to use them for yourself and your team for the before and after to see what you did wrong. Now, you don't have to show the patient what you did wrong, because we're going to see things so differently than anybody else. But I went through the same evolution that everyone does. Like, I was in a hurry to get it from the mill into the patient's mouth. I had no idea that you had to contour things. And it wasn't until someone sat me down and said, hey, look at in this picture how the reflections are different. And you, that's why it looks so funny. Like, you don't know why it looks a little weird. And like Sarek in general, they like to mill things out more rounded. Now, if you take literally 2 minutes and do a little bit of contouring, you can make such a huge difference. But no one had told me that at the beginning when you do your initial training. Now, obviously, I know. And at first you're going to spend a little longer than your 2 minutes because you have to develop that eye. But now it's, you know, I don't spend much more than 2 minutes per crown getting things ready.
All right.
Flattening those line angles.
I'm going to pause you there.
Okay. Sorry. Pause.
Contouring. Let's talk about contouring here a little bit. Cause the, we could have a whole podcast on contouring,
oh,
but let's
I
talk about contouring. Like, let's talk. I like this. I like where this is going to go. Cause I know where you're going to go with this. So contouring, let's talk about first posterior restorations and then anterior, because I would say almost, I would argue to bet 99% of CAD-CAM offices are just milling it, cutting the sprue, and polishing it or glazing it. So when you say contouring for a posterior crown, what do you mean by that? How do you do it, and why do you do it?
Okay, I'm going to back up one step behind, and I am going to talk a minute about preps. Because the better you prep your tooth, the better proposal you're going to get. And that's what the computer's banking on. Dentists, we are phenomenal at under-reducing because everyone's just so scared to reduce enough. And what is enough? You need to know that per material. But if you can prep appropriately, then you're going to get a good proposal. Now that proposal, there may be some little lumps and bumps in there. And then it's this fight of playing the video game, which we can all play. And then it's so fun to use the smooth tool and then reduce here, do all these things. Or we use our hands every single day with our preps. Like, we're so much faster in the contouring. So yes, I take the sprue off, but then I'm just going to accentuate the anatomy naturally in a tooth. So we know that every tooth has three planes. You're going to go towards the CEJ in a lingual fashion, and then you're going to have a flat plane, and then you're going to go towards the incisal at the top of it. Every single tooth same way. And you want those line angles to just be a little bit more confident than typically what you're going to get in design or spending the time in a design. But again, it does not have to take a long time. Just take the burr, smooth out the lumps and bumps. Don't spend a ton of time in that design phase because it's impossible to get all those tiny lumps and bumps out of the way. And so use your hands, because that's what we do.
Are you doing this or is your team doing this?
So posteriors, my team's doing it. All day long.
How did they, like, so this, the reason I'm asking this, because this is a top, like, I had to teach, like, my assistants, I have a few assistants now that are actually formally trained, but I have had a lot of assistants that are, like, on the job training, have no dental anatomy. How do you teach your team, like, what the hell a tooth looks like, so they can do this?
Yeah. So you can still use the Sarek as that roadmap, because even you can have a perfect design and it's not going to mill out exactly like that design. And then you just have to take the time to show them. So don't expect a brand new assistant to take it out of the mill and know what it's going to look like. You want to give them feedback, not in front of the patient, because that's when everyone's going to get defensive. And then make sure you ask permission to give them feedback, like, hey, this is what I'm looking for. Let's fix this, and then have them do it. And I totally believe in show them and then have them do it and then have them teach somebody else. Like, if you can follow that pattern, they will just continue to learn. And
that applies to everything in dentistry.
Everything.
Like,
everything.
And life.
Yeah.
Actually.
And there may be assistants or team members or even doctors who are just never going to see it like you're going to see it. And that's fine. And then that's not their strength, right? So then they're going to do something else that is their strength. And then we just move on to the people who get excited about it and want to see it. But we all see things a little bit differently.
So when you're contouring, are you using like just like a lab handpiece and like diamonds and carbides, or like what are you using? Or are you using like your dental handpiece, like you're on your chair?
I'm using my lab handpiece. So we have two different setups. We just have two different lab handpieces with a bunch of crowns going in and out. And then I'm going to remove my sprue for my glass. So my Emax, lithium disilicates, anything glass, feldspathic porcelain with a heatless wheel. And so typically it's pink or green, depending if it's Meisinger or Brassler. And then I'm going to a diamond, and then I'm going to contour with that diamond. And I just love this like fat barrel diamond. Not barrel as in a football, but just a cylinder with a barrel at the end. And I try to minimize. I know these burr blocks get so beautiful with all these 100 burrs on it, but like I want my systems. I want to be efficient. That patient is still waiting in the chair, so I don't need to use all those burrs. I'm just going to contour with my diamond, and I don't polish it all the way up, because if you polish it too high, typically the glaze will slide on down. So I don't mind that it's a slightly diamond finish in there. Now, I do like to polish on some of my anteriors just to see those reflections ahead of time, but then don't polish too high because when you stain and glaze, it will slide down to the bottom.
All right. Very unfortunate. You guys didn't realize you're getting like a materials lecture here.
I know. Sorry.
No, that's good. I like this because it's important though, because it's important to understand. So that's with glass ceramics and hybrid materials, you're using diamonds. What are you using on zirconia to contour zirconia?
I will tell you that contouring zirconia is not easy at all. That's where I will switch to a fine carbide. So I'm going to use a yellow or red stripe carbide, really low RPM because it is so chalky. I'm always wearing gloves, especially if you have a lot of women in the office. If you lose, lotion, moisturizers, like you don't want to add any moisture to that zirconia. So using gloves, and then I'm sticking to carbides, really fine carbide, really light touch.
So that's
a little bit goes a long ways.
And the reason we're like spending time talking about this is these are the little things like Chris said, like there's so many courses and everything that like teach you how to like do prep design and prep. And then there are a lot of courses out there that teach you to design a crown. But the magic is in the post-processing, mill to mouth. Like that's where the magic is. And so that's why I really want to like really explain this, because like if you really slow down to think about the materials, okay, if it's Emax or glass ceramic, I'm going to use a diamond, you know, use fine diamonds and accentuate the anatomy, you're going to get the great result. If it's zirconia, like Chris said, is hard. Not hard physically, it's hard to contour because it's so freaking soft. And it's really easy to gouge. One of the, like, so spending the time contouring will exponentially change the outcome. The other thing I will say, and I'll add a little bit to this, is that on zirconia, if you spend the time to give it a little bit of a pre-polish in zirconia, that will save you thousands of dollars on polishing burrs and polishing wheels, because in sintered zirconia, when it's rock hard, you're going to make it shine, but it's really hard to change the contour. And so that, and the other aspect is zirconia. For those of you, when you mill zirconia, like when you mill a glass ceramic, it's the same size as the actual tooth. When you mill zirconia, that little barcode number that you either have to enter or scan that says like whatever Z022, whatever, that 22 is the percentage factor that it shrinks or enlarges. So its enlargement factor is 22.3, to shrink that much. And so what it allows you to do is really get some gorgeous anatomy, and like all those like stupid perichromata and all those fancy lobes. And like, if you just take like, you do all your polishing and then you take like a fine diamond and you just run it directly across it, like all of a sudden you put these nice little scratches. If you really start looking at teeth, you'll see all these little scratches, but they're all in like a horizontal pattern. The way you do that is just low speed on your drill, pull it across, and you're going to get these really cool scratches that once that, you know, it's going to look big in the zirconia, like in the pre-sintered state, but then you fire it and it's like, whoo, that thing looks sexy. Like it's crazy how beautiful it can look. So spend the time before you get it into that stupid oven. Okay. Just spend the time. Next step, big question here. And this is polarizing, and Chris, you and I have done enough together. You probably know my opinion, but we're going to debate this potentially. Emax, polish, glaze. And if you glaze, are you spraying or painting? Go.
Well, I love to paint. I hate the spray glaze. I hate it with a passion.
All right. Why do you hate it? Because a lot of people use it.
I know, because you think it's easier, but the consistency is so hard to get. So half of it has the right amount, half of it doesn't, half of it's stippled. Like you have to really, really shake that can and add a ton of it. And then it manages to melt around the little sprue, and then it gets stuck in your plate, and then it breaks off. It's like just drives me insane. So I think the glaze paste, although it's a couple more minutes on the oven, it's so much more consistent over and over and over. That's why I like it better. Can you polish Emax? You can. I just normally glaze because I'll typically add a little bit of color in there because you can do it pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. And for those of you that like to polish, I totally agree with Chris. Like Emax, CAD blocks of Emax, like milled Emax, is monolithic. So it's like one shade in translucency. That's very different than a different like a lucite reinforced glass ceramic, like Empress or something like that, that has a built-in translucency that I'm a little bit more apt to polish because it's built in and I think it's pretty. But I'm with you, Chris, 100% paint glaze. And the reason I am very passionate about this. And docs, if you're wondering why your team can't make beautiful restorations like staining and glazing, it's because 90% of us, I'm throwing out that number, I don't have a true statistic on that. I'm going to say 90% of us are going to only paint glaze in what situation?
Anteriors.
And what is the most common crown we do?
Posterior. Number 19.
Yeah. So if we're only spray glazing all these posteriors because we don't care about the way it looks, yet in the anteriors, we're like, okay, we got to make it look pretty and we got to paint it now. And we want our team to do this. They're only getting the reps when they do the anteriors. So one of the strategies that I've implemented in my practice is I have spray glaze, but Tim is the only one allowed to use it. Like my assistants are not allowed to use spray glaze. You can't use it. You have to come to me. It's literally in my office. You got to come to me. You don't even get to look at it because I want you to custom stain and glaze every single restoration. Two reasons. One, if you ever got a lab crown back that wasn't custom stain and glazed, you would send it back and want your money back. So for me, that comes down to that lab quality. Two, just like you said, Chris, in the very beginning of this episode, you're like, you got really good at CAD CAM through reps and failures. So if you're staining and glazing, I promise you, the first time you use blue, it is going to look awful. And the first time you use white, it is going to look awful. And the only way you're going to get really good at it is with reps. So I'm okay with a tooth number 18 having a really white spot or a really blue kind of spot because nobody can see it but me. And maybe my hygienist who wonders what's going on. So I see this as a great learning tool and education tool for my team. And it builds their confidence. Like I don't have them do it and go, oh my God, redo that. I'm like, hey, what do you think of this? And they'll usually tell you it looks like crap. And they'll be like, do I need to redo it? I'm like, no, it's fine. Worst case scenario, polish the glaze off and it now is a polished restoration. Like that's the worst case scenario. But what it does is it provides a safe environment for your team to fail and it'll allow them to try things because they know if they try to get better and it totally backfires, you're not going to be upset. So it may sound weird. It may seem like a waste of time, but I am such a huge advocate for paint glazing every single tooth that you do. It will make your team better. It'll make you better. Your patients could care less, but it's going to pay off when you need it most, which when you're trying to do all the fancy stuff that Chris does is with her matching number single centrals, which is crazy. So, all right, let's keep going with that because Chris, you love the single central.
I love the single central.
Which terrifies most dentists. What do you love about the single central and how have you built your confidence? And then also give us some recipes of what you like in order to kind of create your lab-like restorations.
So I thought this was going to be the point of contention. So I'm super excited to talk about this.
Oh, don't worry. We're going to talk about this too, because I know where you're going.
We've been teaching long enough that we know each other's patterns. So again, it goes about the reps. And so let's go back to when I started. My competition was a PFM crown, right? Like, could I make an Emax look better than a PFM crown? Absolutely, because it's glass. And so then I have this little bit of playtime with my stains and glazes. Most of the time, the patient, no matter what I think about it, is going to think it's beautiful. Taking the pictures, really seeing those colors, practice, practice, practice. If it's terrible, you polish it off. And it's funny because sometimes you can spend so much time making it perfect with this great artwork. I love the artwork piece of it, like just to try to make it match. And then the patient will tell you, oh my gosh, I paid for a new tooth. You know, they want it monochromatic because that's what they had in their mind. You just never know how patients are going to go. But then, you know, what do? You polish it off. No big deal. But what you learn is that all teeth, they have a pattern. There's a gingival color, there's an incisal color, and then there's the halo at the end of it to set off that incisal. And that's when you have a monochromatic block, will make it look like it's layered. even if it is a monochromatic block. So I always work in the same pattern no matter what I do. I'm just changing the colors that I use. So with my Emax solutions, then I'm normally using, I love the stain one, and it's like that A base, because my patient population, I have a lot of A base. It's by far my most prominent. A and then C is typically my second. But even with my C shades, then a lot of times I play on my translucency and I'll still use an A base, but do a more translucent block to give it that C shade. And that's just experience over time, taking lots of photos and realizing how to match shades. So I'll always do my gingival. Again, I like that one stain first, and then I'll do my translucency. In the Emax crystal system, again, I think it's one of the most user-friendly systems, which is why I like it. They have a lavender and a blue. It's I1 and I2. I2 is the lavender and I1's the blue. Blue is a tough color because blue is bright and everyone wants to put on too much of it and then it just looks fake. The two is more subtle, that lavender. And so I am not afraid to mix my shades. I love mixing probably 3/4 lavender with 1/4 blue in there. That's pretty much my most consistent translucency color because it gives it just enough pop. And then I will highlight that translucency with my little incisal edge halo. And then this is where Tim and I always fight over which color's best. I love cream because I just think it looks very subtle and makes it look a lot more translucent, like it's layered. Or you can use white. Now, if I'm doing a bleach shade, any of the BL 1, 2, 3, 4s, then I'm definitely using white. But really B1 and below, I'm typically using that cream. If I want to paint in craze lines, that's something I don't ask permission. I just do it. And if the patient complains because they wanted a new tooth, then I will back off. But I use cream a lot for my lines or my decal marks, that kind of stuff. So, but I always use the same pattern.
When you're doing this, are you doing this in the purple state or are you firing first and then glazing?
So I do it in the purple stage. I tried to train myself to do that from the beginning because it's going to save you time. If you can learn how to do it on that purple blue block, then you're saving your oven time. If I mess up, I can polish it off and then start again with it as a white base shade. So that's how I learned to do it. Try to do it as a single fire. Worst case scenario, I need a second fire. What's funny about that is now when I paint on a tooth shade, I have a harder time seeing it.
I completely agree. It's funny how that changes over time.
Yeah.
Well, and so what I think is important, a couple things that I think is important to understand is that when we look at how we do spray glaze, for those of you that are spray glazing, typically you would apply your stains or your characterization shades before you would glaze it. So you'd apply the colors and then you spray glaze it till it's that nice frosty white. Or if you're really not caring to make your team amazing, you're just spray glazing and firing, but you're not going to do that anymore because you understood Tim's soapbox. But to reiterate what Chris was saying, you've got the purple state crown and then you're applying the glaze first. So you apply that glaze uniform. One of the things that I learned from Chris that has stuck with me and I've taught my team forever is that the glaze consistency. And so Chris always advocates for thick in consistency, thin in application. Like, it took me a while to like really wrap my head around that. And I'd never heard that before until I took a course from her. And I was like, thick in consistency, thin in application. And really what that does is when you do that, A, it's easier for you to apply your stains. B, you will get a much more consistent glazing and consistency of your glaze when it fires. You're not going to get that really watery where it pools, and you're not going to get that really thick where you've now lost all that cool contouring that you've done and all those scratches you put in are now like disappeared. So thicken consistency, thin in application. That's a good take home. I love that one. The other thing that I think is really important to take home is that Chris is talking about all these different shades and how she mixes them and puts them together. One of the things that drives me insane is like we buy a crazy expensive system. Like whatever CAD/CAM system you buy, you spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on this system. Yet the only stains and glazes that we want to buy because we're cheap are the ones that came in the original little starter package. And we don't realize that there's these plethora of different colors and shade. Think of it like water painting and colors. Like you can mix them, you can shade match. Like, that's the magic. You need to make the artistry stand out and be look right. So spend the couple of $100 to get the kit. This is one plug I'm going to give. I'm not, I should be sponsored by Avaclar. I think Chris is probably sponsored by Avaclar. I'm not at her level yet. But one of the things that I really, really, really like is Avaclar makes this really good staining and glazing kit. And their kit comes with this little kind of tray thing that's got a cover. And I love the cover because most of our labs have shit flying everywhere. And when you get particles in the glaze, it just like, and then it shows up in your crown, and it will always show up on an anterior tooth number 9 when you need it the least because you're running 15, 20, 30, 40 minutes behind. So I love their kit because it has that. The other thing I really like is that Avaclar, like there's a lot of different glaze systems out there, but Avaclar's glaze system is very robust and it's very, like Chris said, very easy to use. So I am a big advocate for it. If you talk to a lot of your lab technicians, they really like that kit. Now, that is a stain and glaze system. That is not a porcelain system. So a lot of people are like, I want to use Mio or Ivocolor by Avaclar. Like that, we're talking about two different things. Both of those systems are amazing, but what we're talking about is really tailored more towards glass ceramics, and it's a staining system that's used with a clear glaze. Avaclar makes some really good products. I will give a plug for that because I love it. No, I'm not sponsored. No, they do not do anything for the podcast, but maybe they should.
Hey, we could promote that.
Yeah. Okay, so I think the reason I like that is one of the things Chris brought up is what Chris is describing is that that's her recipe. And the more of these you do, the more you're going to start figuring out your recipe. And part of this is trial and error, like she said, figure out what works for you. My recipe is very similar to Chris's. I love that shade one. I would say shade one is the vast, vast majority for my cervical chroma. Sometimes I'll use shade two and like mix it with shade one every now and then. Those are the brown shades. Be careful getting to brown. Like what you'll notice is that those will say shade. And it's really important to understand that like shade one is a shade, meaning it's meant to do chroma, value, that kind of stuff. They also have stains. Stains are meant to be characterizational things. Those are not meant to be painted everywhere. One of the things that drives me bonkers is when people put baby poop on teeth.
Which is sunset?
Baby poop is sunset. For people that have children, take sunset and squirt it out and you'll be like, oh yeah, that's, yep, I've seen that before. Because it is such an ugly color. It's meant for dentin show through. That's why it's called a stain. It's meant to be like the occlusal stain through for dentin. So unless a tooth looks like it has orange, like a yellowish color, like yellow, it looks like baby poop, then you can use it. But I would caution you from using sunset. I've heard a lot of reps say use sunset on the cervical. I don't know where that came from. That is a stain. That is not a shade. So don't use it there. That is characterization. The other thing that Chris and I differ a little bit is Chris loves lavender in cream. And Tim likes more blue and white. Like even like, for those of you on the YouTube channel right now, like we even look like Chris is very lavender and cream and her lighting right now. And Tim is very much blue and white and his light, like lighting. So blue and white are very harsh. They're very, you got to be careful with them. Lavender and cream are much, much more forgiving. And as much as it kills me to say it, I have transitioned more to cream than I ever thought I would. I still prefer blue. And the reason for that is I can see blue better on purple. Lavender is purple. So when I place lavender, I can't see it. And I don't know if it's because I'm in my face or if my eyes are, I don't know what it is. But that lavender is very subtle. And so I struggle personally. It's a skill set that you just get used to. And so there's no right or wrong. You can mix or match. And so but the point of this is every crown that Chris and I are doing is we have a recipe. And I think that's really, really important for us to understand and to teach our team is let's have a recipe for us to follow. So one of the things I do in my lab is I have a photograph and one of them is shapes of teeth with contours of where to grind and where not to grind. So I call that like my primary anatomy. And then I've got another sheet that has photographs of posterior and anterior teeth that have stain and glaze strategies, meaning this is where you paint the white, this is where you paint shade the chroma and the translucency. And it helps my team. Speaking of translucency, because I know how you can answer this, what, Chris, is the biggest mistake new users make when using either lavender or blue to make translucency?
Besides too much
with regards to shape in anatomy.
Where they're putting it.
How they're putting it.
How they're putting it.
You teach this in your course. So you have your early case of when you're using blue and it's a very...
Thank you. Thank you for that. Yes. So you don't want to ever paint straight lines. Ever.
No.
Because never. When we think of translucency, like we think of a straight line at the incisal edge. But if you look at translucency, it's very feathered up and down. There's nothing straight about it. And that's the biggest thing. So everyone wants to take their brush and just literally go, wah. But really, you just want to go up, down, up, down, up, down, and feather it. And I'll typically go in those cervical depressions, mesial and distal, about a third of the way down the tooth, and then about a millimeter at the incisal edge.
And part of this is teaching your team like why you're doing it. Like what you're trying to mimic is translucency. What translucency truly shows is not translucency. What it's showing is where the block out within the enamel is of the mamelons of Denton. So really, you've got these mamelons of Denton and these mountain ranges that come up and down. And that's what blocks out all the translucency of the enamel. Otherwise, it would just be a big gray block. So don't make it a straight line. That'll kill it. The other thing that Chris, and I don't think Chris coined this, but you talk about, like, I use white for this. You use sometimes with when you talk about distraction.
The art of distraction. No, that is James Klim. 100% stole that. He has been one of my heroes for so long. And what he talks about is just looking for those little nuances that don't make it so patterned. So whether that's a decalcification mark or maybe that's a craze line, like what makes that person's teeth just a little bit unique, and just throw in, it's like throwing in a scribble or a doodle that's going to distract your eye from just a very super consistent pattern.
And that's why like temporaries look so weird, because they're just one color and they don't look right. I'm telling you, like, that is one time the art of distraction, and I teach my team this with white. Like if you really start looking at teeth, you'll notice that the distal and the mesial and distal like line angles, incisal line angles, there's a lot of frosting that occurs on most people's teeth, especially in the maxillary anteriors, because the wet dry line is higher than that. So they get a little desiccated. So you really see a lot of this white. And if you, this goes back to what the first thing Chris was talking about is like, you have to take the photos and you have to use photography when you're doing the staining glazing so you can see it. Otherwise you're just guessing. And so when you do this art of distraction, you add some white, and you may do this and you're like, why am I making this look like this? I promise you, you can screw up the hue massively. Like you can literally make it like way wrong hue. But if you get the value close, the grayness close, and you put a little art of distraction on, I promise you it's going to look great. As long as you got that, the art of distraction, the contours and the value, you're going to nail it. Like it's not about A1, A3 or A4. That's not what it's about. It's about the value of the A range and the line angles, how the light reflects off of it, and then distracting the eye so it doesn't pick out what's not the same. The other thing I want to talk on, and I don't know who I heard this from. I think, so I got to give shout out to, the first person I heard this from was Ali Fromfelter, who teaches with me at the smile design course with 3D. She talked about when we're doing smile design, she's like 8 and 9 are twins and 7 and 10 are sisters. And I'd never heard somebody explain it like that. But what it really drove home is that like 8 and 9 need to be the same. Like geometrically, like our eyes will go crazy if they're not the same, like embrasures, heights of contour, line angles. Like it's not about the color. It's about the shape. The laterals, on the other hand, we got a lot of wiggle room to make them a little creative and blend in. And so the whole thing is 8, 9 are twins, laterals are sisters. I always like that. I don't know why. So I don't know who coined it. I don't think she did. I think she stole it from somewhere, because that's how her and I work. Steal from everybody.
And but, then you share it with everybody. That's the whole point, right?
So that
laterals are, laterals are tough.
Laterals, I would say, are the hardest tooth.
I would agree with that.
Essentials are easy. You just copy the one next door. Laterals and canines, those can be tough. Those are tough.
Because so a lot of
don't
times,
beat yourself up.
Space discrepancies are in there. And then I think what patients see, because now everyone does that selfie angle,
Oh
it's
my
not that
gosh.
straight on angle, it's a selfie angle. And so patients really want that incisal embrasure to be the exact same between the central and the lateral. And then if you start seeing the patterns, you'll also notice that white band is thicker on the laterals than on your centrals and definitely on the canines. But it is tough space-wise to get those embrasure spaces to match up.
And the other thing, laterals, for those of you doing CEREC specifically, CEREC loves to bulbous out laterals. If you really look at most laterals, they are very flat and they have very angular grind zones, which is a totally different topic. But the area where the shadows from the facial plane as it wraps into the embrasures into the interproximal is very, very defined. So when you really start looking at that, like everything with teeth, it's all about shadows and depth makes teeth look vital and vibrant. If it's all in one plane or rounded, teeth look very dull and not really attractive. So laterals are tough because CEREC loves to bulbous them out, thin them out, smooth them out. That's where those grind zone or the contouring that Chris was talking about, those different facial planes, it becomes critical. So focusing on that. All right. So some of us are at different points of our journey. So we covered a lot of like the basic, like entry level CEREC user, right? Getting into it, making it look lab quality, basics of contouring, some staining, glazing, all that. There are a lot of us too, though, that are like, hey, I've had this system for a while. I feel really good about the onesie twosies. And I've done a few quadrants and all that, but I would really like to do bigger cases. Can you do like full arch or larger anterior cases or whatever with CEREC? Like, do you do that or do you just send that out to a lab?
So I personally love to do that. That's my favorite thing to do with CEREC. But I will tell you, I take the time to do it. Meaning I see one patient that whole day, the patient sitting in my chair, they know it's going to be a long day, but they know they're going to get their permanence at the same time. I have 4 mills in my practice. And so I do have the ability to mill a lot. I would say even 2 mills is pretty good because if I mill 4 at the same time, I can't contour fast enough with those mills with the teeth coming out, but that helps with my efficiency. But I would much rather do those bigger cases together than the onesie twosies because now I have total control. The secret to success for a lot of that is your prep. It is amazing what your lab covers for you. And so I would tell you the more cases I do, the more I fight with design. It makes me think of A, I prep better, but I also will set up with like small clear aligner. Like we do SureSmile in our office, and I am much more prone today to say, let me put you in 3, 4, 5 trays, get your teeth aligned just a little bit so that I can give you the results that you want to get. And my vision or my design approach has changed dramatically since I started practicing because I see more. And with social media and AI, all those things, like you start to look at things and be like, well, I want to be able to create that. How can I create that? Well, you start designing, you mess up, you realize how you can't create it, whether it's bad preps or not having teeth in the right position. And once you put all those pieces in play, then you can deliver really amazing things. So I love the bigger cases.
And I will tell everybody here, like as we wrap up here tonight, the moment you start doing full arch dentistry, because a lot of people are like, oh, I don't have those kind of cases in your practice. I promise you, you do. What you don't have is the confidence and potentially the education to feel confident to propose that kind of treatment, because it's very different when somebody comes to you and wants better smile and you don't feel confident in your ability to deliver that, or you don't have confidence in your lab. And one of the strategies that I had is I didn't have confidence in my lab, and I sure as hell didn't have confidence in myself to do it. And what it became was like patient selection. But what changed things for me was education. And that opened a door that has never closed and has allowed me to practice in a way that I've never been happier practicing. I hate fillings. I hate children. And so that's what I don't want to do anymore. And so I love CAD/CAM dentistry, like even single units, you guys. When I cement one of those or bond one of those in, every time I put that in somebody's mouth, I'm like, wow, I cannot believe this works. Every time, like my patient's excited. I am literally to this day, after a decade of doing it, I am still just as excited. I'm like, this thing is awesome. And when you can transform an entire smile, that changes you on a level that I don't, if you've never experienced it and you've never had that patient cry in your chair, you'll never get experience. Like Chris has so many testimonial and videos of like patients crying on these transformations. Like, there's a reason she loves doing it, gets passionate about it, and which is infectious, which is why I love it. And I'm going to give a total shameless plug because I think education is so important. And there's two components to this. There's a lot of ways to look at things, but I'm a big advocate of bigger picture, facially generated 3D treatment planning, utilizing full face and smile design principles based on occlusion. And there are different places. You can go to Spear, Coys, Dawson, all that. I personally love teaching this, and that's why that's why I teach the smile design course with 3D, is because this topic is so passionate to me. Allie is my person who I teach with, but that we teach more the smile design, the concept, selling the dentistry, getting patients to say yes to the best, exceed the dentistry, see what's possible. But that gets you only so far. That gets you from the recognizing and diagnosing, seeing the dentistry, to treatment planning it and doing a wax up and temporaries. What it doesn't do is teach you to go to the finish line. And I've been doing dentistry a long time, and there's certain courses that, man, get me excited. Chris, I got to plug your course because Chris is very passionate. She does a lot of teaching, but she would never plug her own course. So I'm going to plug it for her because you have a very, very unique course. Honestly, I'm not aware of another course really like this anywhere. Like in reality, like people will do it here and there, but like consistently you do this course. So talk to people about your course, because I think our courses pair really well because we kind of lead them up to that and then you take it home. So tell us a little bit about the Same Day Smiles course.
I would love to. Well, it's always my favorite when you're there because Tim and I have a lot of things in common, but we also practice dentistry a lot different. So I think we have so many compliments at this course, and we always have so much fun when we teach it together. So thank you very much always when you're there. Like Tim said, I love education and I love going to courses. And I think it's so important to do the didactic and to learn from the models. But then how do you bring that home to your own practice? And that's always the step that's a hindrance, because it's terrifying to go to your own home in your own practice and do it by yourself. And so I've had the very unique opportunity to work with Implant Pathway, or The Pathway. We have a teaching facility down in Arizona, 32 ops. And when the patients come to the course, all the dentistry is free. And so I love this idea of being able to give back to patients who wouldn't be able to do these large cases. So oftentimes we're doing the full upper arch, changing someone's smile. At our last class, the doctor did the upper arch and then 22 through 27. Like, it was just insane how many crowns got done. And we're looking at all the principles of smile design. We're starting with the basics, milling a couple teeth that first day. The second day, we go over all the treatment plans that are going to happen. So if we have 6, 10 cases, whatever that looks like, we're going to sit down, we're going to treatment plan all those cases, talk about them. Like, what are the pitfalls? What are we going to look for? What are the shades we're going to talk about? Anything that will come up. These can be crowns, veneers, implant crowns, bridges. Typically, they're a mix, a little bit of everything, because often these patients are pretty devastated in their dentition. So we will have 3D printed models of those cases. We assign them to the doctors. They will prep the models, design the case, stain and glaze it. And then my favorite part is when Tim comes around, he takes pictures, and then he gets his iPad out and he draws all your mistakes.
I do it in a right? very, I don't rip, I rip you down, but I build you up. I promise.
Yes, yes.
It's a love. It's all for the love.
It is so detailed and there's so much visual behind it. And plus your photography is just so phenomenal. It makes it very easy for the docs to see it. And then we try to gather those cases. And then as a group, we talk about like, what were some of the challenges? What can we look for the next day? And so then on day 3 is when they actually work on that patient and they have to start that case all over again. But we start at 8 a.m. and typically we're done 3-4 o'clock, sometimes a little later, depending how many crowns are happening, but they deliver that same day. And that's where it's so rewarding to see, I don't know who I like following more, the patient or the doctor, where they really get to witness the emotion. And it's been a long day for everybody, but the patients are always crying. Like, the biggest guys covered in tattoos are always my favorite, because they're the ones that like break down and get up and give hugs, are bawling because they never thought they could have a smile like that. And, you know, then our job is we go back through the pictures and have to say like, okay, your line angle is off on this. And like, but that's just us teaching you for the next time. You just have to be constantly reminded, like, this was the reaction you got from the patient. Like, this patient patient is ecstatic and you truly change that person's life. Like, that's why I like doing those cases, because there's no better high than that. I mean, you
it
really
teaches
can
you the
affect.
Bigger picture in dentistry. You guys, we deal with so much shit every day of people saying, I hate coming to you. I hate coming to you. I promise you, every person you do this type of dentistry to will love you. They are paying to see you, and they will pay again because of how rewarding it was. The other thing I got to plug with that is that two things. One, docs, if you are an experienced Sarah doc and you've been doing this a long time, yet you have an associate or somebody who's like, you're like, dude, I don't have time to teach them all this thing. This is like the best crash course for learning your CEREC. I mean, literally, we teach people that don't have any CEREC experience ever. And we have them literally in 3 days prepping an entire arch of anteriors. So it's super rewarding to see how far people come. It puts people outside of their comfort zone for sure, but it gives them a super safe place to ask questions, to learn, to fail, and grow. And which is why it is, like, to this day, I gotta admit, it is my favorite course that I'm involved with. Even the, like, more fun than ones I get to teach. Like, it is still my favorite course because I just is so powerful. So when is your next smile design course, or your smile same day smiles course?
We're probably going to have one. We always have one around Veterans Day in November, and then we'll have one in the summer. We haven't locked down our date quite yet. So implantpathway.com is the website, and there's always updates there, or contacts, or you can contact me, obviously, and ask what those dates are. Sometimes we throw in these little boutique ones. So if you have a group that you want to come practice with, then call and we can try to set up dates, and I can probably talk Tim into coming to Arizona and helping out too.
Easy for me to come. If you're like, hey, that's awesome, but I don't know the principles of occlusion and smile design, our next course with 3D Dennis on smile design is June 4th through the 6th. Takes you everything from photography to trial smile, 3D printing, mock-up, to the printing of the prototype restorations. So we take you all the way there, and then it pairs perfectly with Chris's same day smiles to take you to the finish lines. Chris, thank you so much. If people want to like pick your brain or like find out more about you, how could they get in contact with you on like Instagram, that kind of stuff? What are you?
Yeah, Instagram's easy. It's Dr. Chris Odland. So DrKrisAadland. And yeah, Instagram's a great way.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. Everybody else, get moving. Stop spray glazing. Start paint glazing. It's all about the contours. But more importantly, just start. Like, just slow down, see the details, and honestly, have some fun with this. It's so much fun. It's why Chris and I love this so much. But thank you, everybody. Until next time. Remember to keep smiling, and we'll check you later.
If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe so you get notified when all the new content is released. And don't forget to rate, review, and share this podcast with all your friends and colleagues. For more information about all things happening within the 3D Dentist family, follow us at www.3d-dentist.com. Thanks for listening, and I hope you are leaving with new insights to help transform and level up your practice. Until next time, keep smiling.